This is PodTech News Weekly Magazine for Saturday, November 25th, 2006. I'm Jason Lopez. On today's program, Christmas shopping kicks off with the usual shortage of the hot item of the season. In this case, the hot items, both game consoles. They've sued grandmothers and teenagers. We were wondering when they'd get around to suing someone with money. The music industry goes after MySpace. That and more coming up on PodTech News Weekly. Apple brings out a new product every couple of months, and so far consumers believe they need every new device from the company. But is there really pent-up consumer demand for the rumored Apple iPhone? In this anecdotal survey, PodTech's Catherine Girardot talked to people coming out of the downtown San Francisco Apple store to find out.
I am definitely going to postpone buying an iPod and wait for the iPhone to come into picture.
How long do you think you'll have to wait?
Probably a few months. I think it's... Well, what I read, the rumor that I read was it's already in manufacturing in Taiwan. I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's what I'm hoping for.
Analysts and Mac watchers have some fresh buzz to add to the Apple rumor mill. It's rumored that the iPhone is expected to be unveiled at January's Macworld Expo in San Francisco. In a recent research paper, American technology research analyst Sha Wu said the iPhone was technically more or less done. And a report this week in the Taiwanese financial daily Commercial Times said that Taiwan-based Hanhai Precision Industry Company Limited is already building the iPhone. Naturally, this sent hope and speculation flying through the blogosphere. What would an iPhone look like? What will it do? How will it work? Mike McGuire, a research vice president at Gartner, Inc., was quoted saying Apple's challenge will be to make a good phone that's also a good music player, or at least an extension of the iPod and iTunes. He also said finding the right carrier is likely to present some challenges for Apple. Most importantly, though perhaps an irrelevant question when it comes to Apple, is will it sell? American technology researcher Sha Wu said the iPhone could mean major sales for Apple. But with all the sexy mobile phones out on the market now, will consumers switch to an Apple phone? I talked to people Tuesday outside the Apple store near San Francisco's Union Square. Here's what they had to say.
If Apple came out with a cell phone that were a combination iPod cell phone, would you buy it?
I suppose so. I hadn't really thought. I'm an iPod user myself back in Britain. So, I love it. So you're saying just like a cell phone with...
This is rumored, and we don't know what it's going to look like, when it's going to come out. It's sort of rumored that maybe they'll bring it out in January at the Macworld Expo. Mm. And it's supposedly a cell phone with some sort of support for iTunes and the iPod, mm-hmm. or sort of
a... Well, it sounds like a great idea, but I'm still angry as a Brit. I can't download movies yet. I can't do that till summer next year, because they don't release it on the UK iTunes. So I'm not gonna, any new thing I'm not going to see for a while anyway. So, I mean, I don't understand why I come here and see my American friends and they can download movies now. I can't. You know, I've got the technology. I just can't do it. So, you know, something like that, I'd wonder when I'd see it. But
if Apple were to come out with a cell phone iPod combination, do you think you might buy it?
Probably not. It's good to be, you know, if it's Apple, I might like consider it and just take a look at it and see if it's good enough. But at this point, I don't think so.
Why?
It's a cool gadget, but I'm not too sure if I need it. You know, if I have my iPod and I have my cell phone, I don't think I might just go for one that does the same thing. So it's a good idea. I don't know. It might work.
I am definitely going to postpone buying an iPod and wait for the iPhone to come into picture.
How long do you think you'll have to wait?
Probably a few months. I think it's... Well, what I read, the rumor that I read was it's already in manufacturing in Taiwan. I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's what I'm hoping for.
And so, what features do you think you would want this device to have?
Besides the iPod music stuff and video stuff, I'd definitely like to have a PDA feature in it and an interface with probably a stylus or touch screen or something like that, because that's what I really want in a phone. Music, video, camera, not that big fan, but definitely a PDA.
I think many people would buy it. I don't think I personally would, but...
And why?
I like to have things as cheap as possible. Like, my phone was free. That's how I like to do it.
I'm not really a technological person. I don't even have a cell phone. The CD player, that's about it. I'm not a cell phone fan. If I'm out and about town, I don't want anyone calling me every 5 minutes. And I don't want to be one of the people that never answers their cell phone.
Shoppers outside the Apple Store in downtown San Francisco. In San Francisco, I'm Catherine Giraudeau, PodTech News.
This is PodTech News Weekly. I'm Jason Lopez. Universal Music Group's recent lawsuit against MySpace has been generating a lot of internet chatter about what's really behind the largest record company's legal pursuit of the largest social networking site. PodTech's Matt Kelly covers that story in this report.
Universal has been vocal in its criticism of both MySpace and YouTube since September, accusing both of copyright infringement and alluding to possible legal action. Yet the behemoth recently settled its claim against YouTube prior to the video sharing site's purchase by Google. So why hasn't UMG settled its beef with MySpace? For analysis, I spoke with Susan Kevorkian, IDT analyst.
We believe that Universal has been quick to the punch with this lawsuit, and in a peculiar way because, you know, for all intents and purposes, MySpace has demonstrated recently that it is willing to work with big media to limit distribution of unauthorized copyrighted material via its users. For example, they recently announced their plans to deploy technology provided by Gracenote to monitor and filter and block unauthorized copyrighted content from the site, as well as being a platform where artists and bands can legitimately sell their content. In that respect, we think that Universal Music Group has overreacted by being litigious at a time when they could better spend those resources, both financial and personnel-wise, on working with MySpace and other social networking sites to monitor distribution of copyrighted content over the services at the same time that they develop those services as legitimate channels for content distribution.
Kevorkian adds there may be another motive behind the lawsuit involving the release of a new album by a major recording artist.
We think an important precipitating factor was the fact that some songs from a Jay-Z album that is actually scheduled for release today became available on MySpace within the last couple of weeks, so well before the release date, and Universal was concerned, rightfully so, that it could impact first week sales of the CD and of digital downloads. But, you know, it could also be argued that the presence of new Jay-Z music on MySpace, too, could have driven awareness for consumers to actually buy the CD or buy the digital album when it came out. Universal Music deserves to have control over when and how its music is distributed. And so if the company didn't want Jay-Z's music available 2 weeks before the predetermined release date, that's its prerogative. But by the same token, you know, is the answer to take the company to court? We don't think so, not necessarily. We think there are technologies available to help limit redistribution of unauthorized copyrighted content via MySpace, and also the tools available to broaden the scope of MySpace to reach music consumers more effectively, particularly teens and young adults who, you know, of any consumer group, are most accustomed to finding media online, whether through legitimate channels or not.
And still another factor for filing the lawsuit may have been the terms Universal was setting forth in its demands with MySpace, and that the social networking site walked out of the negotiations.
The rumor is that the companies couldn't come to terms is that MySpace balked at the prospect of having to pay licensing fees for media that had already been available prior to an agreement being struck, so that they didn't agree on some key details. I think it's notable that this was Universal Music acting on its own rather than an RIAA lawsuit representing all four of the major labels against MySpace. I think this represents a specific strategy for Universal Music in particular. And that said, I mean, again, we think it's short-sighted of a major label to move towards taking MySpace or any other social networking site to court when clearly there is a tremendous potential for it to develop into a key platform for distributing media legitimately, short and long term.
For more on the lawsuit, I spoke with David Card of Jupiter Kagan Research, who noted that the lawsuit may be just a form of bluffing, as in poker, to force MySpace back to the table.
Well, I think they honestly believe, and I can't say I argue with them completely, that they have the right to protect their intellectual property. But I also think this is very public negotiations. So I think one of the main reasons for doing this is to bring them to the table and get a deal that everybody could be happy about.
And while the blogosphere is ripe with speculation that Universal's motives are to keep artists from using social networking sites like MySpace to make a living without signing up with a record label, Card disagrees, noting that the role of the record companies in making rock stars remains unchanged, and yet that other parts of the business are changing.
I think if you want to be a band and make a living, you might be able to do that in the new media without much help from a label. But if you want to become a rock star, I think you're going to need a label behind you. The record labels are gradually changing their business from being a business that's primarily based on selling discs, you know, getting out of being record companies and being music companies, playing more of a management role with their artists. Right now, they act almost as venture capitalists. They do a lot of the funding of artist development. But historically, record labels haven't participated in tours or much of the licensing unless they had a big publishing arm. So I think we're going to see record labels evolve into music companies and play probably a bigger role with some of the artists. And some of the artists will be comfortable with that and others might not.
But Card notes that may be the root of the problem and that ultimately the reason for the lawsuit is a simple one, money. And Card adds that the record business of the past is not the business of today.
Well, the music industry is in trouble. So record sales, whether they're CDs or vinyl or whatever, really peaked in 1999. And it's been steadily declining ever since. Overall consumer spending on entertainment, as the Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates it, that's another reason to think that 79 to 99 run is abnormal, because music spending used to be in the 3% range, and then it went up into the 4% range. It doesn't sound like a big change, but it is. And it may not be the way it should be. So the industry got overbuilt during the good times. It needs to scale back. But of course, you know, not necessarily the same players. Now we've got companies like YouTube and MySpace and Yahoo and Apple. You know, Apple didn't participate in the music industry before. And digital distribution, whether it's songs or ringtones or subscription services like Rhapsody and Napster, those are the things that are growing right now. But it's a big question whether they're going to grow fast enough to actually ever return the industry to the size it was, to net growth. But that does look promising. So in the context of that, and the idea that the CD has actually been around an awful long time, but there's a reason to believe that the CD is actually sort of artificially bigger than it should have been. The album arrived as rock was maturing, and there was a very big, abnormally big generation, the baby boomers, for whom music made it meant a tremendous part of their cultural existence. So they bought more music maybe than anybody ever did before. It meant a lot to them. They bought it three times. They bought it in vinyl, they bought it in cassette, and they bought it in CD. And the pop industry went from singles to albums, which also increased sales. And you could argue that it's sort of unnatural for the pop music industry to be based on albums rather than singles. So when you put all those pieces together and then add new competition from things like video games and DVDs, let alone piracy, you see there's a lot of reasons why the music industry has been shrinking for the last several years. So you can see why somebody who makes their living off of music, whether it's an artist or a label or a publisher or whatever, is trying to tap into as many revenue streams as possible, including licensing, touring, and all the digital products. For instance, MTV, when it got started, didn't have to pay royalties on music videos. The labels treated that as promotional costs. And now MTV pays for videos. So this is what's going on. The music industry needs to tap into multiple revenue streams. The other thing is MySpace is buried within News Corp. Nobody really knows how big it is. It's not as big as a lot of people think it is. It's huge in terms of users and page views and things like that, but it's not producing hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue yet. It has only recently started to sell any ads, for instance, and make any money off of all that traffic. I think MySpace is actually evolving into a youth portal, you know, a business much like, you know, Yahoo's or MSN's or AOL's. And that's very exciting. But there's a big part of the MySpace audience that listens to a lot of music. The other thing is that, you know, that music is pretty complicated, right? There's a lot of rights associated with music. And there are broadcast and performance rights, as well as publishing rights, as well as ownership rights, all sorts of very complicated things. And some of them are regulated. Some of them are sort of set by copyright law as to what the rates are and what the product is that you pay those particular rates for. The Digital Millennium copyright kind of draws a line in the sand in some ways over different kinds of services. So a pure on-demand service has to sort of qualify to pay a certain kind of a royalty. But a broadcast service that more represents radios pays a different set of royalties that are actually established by law rather than by contract. It's all very complicated and will probably evolve, although some of those things are in place. And people's business models will change dramatically. Record labels are going to be very different businesses in the 21st century than they were in the 20th. And MySpace is going to be a different kind of a company, but it's messy right now. And, you know, the industry is suing its best promotional vehicle, but this is the same industry that sues its fans. So.
In the end, however, he does believe both parties will settle.
So it is kind of disappointing to see this, but I'm not sure that this is really about suing people and stopping piracy. I think it's about negotiating in public for some kind of a deal where revenue would change hands. If you scare people, they will... they'll come forward with a better deal.
In Los Angeles, I'm Matt Kelly for PodTech News.
You're listening to PodTech News Weekly. I'm Jason Lopez. Finding a Sony PlayStation 3 or Nintendo Wii this holiday season will most likely be a difficult task, unless you want to buy the next-gen consoles online at a significantly marked-up price. Fortunately, there are other choices out there for all you gaming and tech geeks, including Microsoft's Xbox 360, which has a cheaper price tag than the PS3 and more games than its rivals. PodTech's Rio Pacino explains.
It's been just a few days since the Sony PlayStation 3 and Nintendo Wii were released to the masses, and for those looking to purchase one of those systems, you're just about out of luck. The systems are unavailable at practically every store out there. However, you can purchase PS3 or the Wii on websites such as eBay. The PlayStation 3, priced at $499 and $599, is being sold on the online auction site for prices up to $2,000, while the $250 Nintendo Wii is being sold on eBay for $500 and up. Now, for those not willing to fork out that kind of cash for a next-gen console, there are some alternatives out there. IDC senior research analyst Ida Rose Sylvester wants consumers to know that the world doesn't revolve around the Sony PlayStation 3 or the Nintendo Wii.
The consumer has a choice of the Xbox 360, or a consumer can buy a more multi-purpose device, a PC that's targeted towards high-end gaming. That's a different experience, but it's an option. And, of course, you can do other things with that PC in your household. Of course, the handheld devices are shipping in great quantities, and there are plenty of PSPs and Nintendo DSs and Game Boys, for that matter. So if you want to focus on the gaming experience, there are definitely many choices. But I think the consumer is looking elsewhere beyond gaming for their consumer fix this Christmas.
Beyond gaming, in what form or fashion?
Well, if you look at what's been selling in the last few months, or actually all year, MP3 players, digital still cameras, even DVD players, and especially digital TVs are flying off the shelves this Christmas.
Now let's go ahead and backtrack to the portable gaming devices. You mentioned the Nintendo DS, PSP, and Game Boy. What are some of the features that gamers would enjoy?
Well, it really isn't quite the same experience as sitting in a room with a big game in front of you. The graphics tend to be not quite as good in any way. You're looking at them on a very small screen, but consumers look at some of the other features, certainly. Portability. You could take this with you when you go to grandma's house for Thanksgiving. Wireless connectivity. You can play with other people, in some cases around the globe, which is a very unique experience you don't get on your console. And on things like the PSP, you can watch movies. It's a very multi-purpose device that you can get a lot of benefit from, even though it's not, unfortunately, the PS3.
And they're cheap. They're not as expensive as the, you know, $499 and $599 PS3. It looks like here the DS is priced at, I think, $129, PSP $199, and Game Boy $79. So price has to be a good thing when it comes to these consoles as well.
The price is a great thing, and also the number of gaming titles available for all of these consoles, the portable consoles, is huge. So the consumer is buying right into an established base of titles. And the experience is really, really good. So if a consumer is insisting on gaming this year, going portable is not a bad idea.
You said the word established. When you say that word, it reminds me of the 360. I mentioned that briefly earlier in the podcast. Let's talk 360 and the fact that that system's out there and it's readily available for those out there who are looking to buy a next-gen console.
Gaming is a bit like religion. People either are or they aren't in a certain camp when it comes to gaming. There are fans of Sony, and obviously we've seen based on the riots and the unfortunate violence this week, there are people who have to have a Sony. Of course, there are people who really wanted to try out the Wii. They're definitely reaching to a new class of gamers with that product. And then there are people who either are satisfied or strongly fond of the Xbox. They're not a lot of crossover. I don't go get an Xbox necessarily because I didn't get a PS3. I either go on eBay and spend $3,500 or I wait. I wait till probably Q1 when there are enough Blu-ray drives and enough chips to go supply the market with a normal demand. So there won't be a lot of seasonality. You'll see an interesting spike in sales come Q1, Q2 of some of these newer devices.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because I'd assume that PS3 and Wii fanboys would actually go ahead and just say, you know, screw it, I'll just get a 360, but you beg to differ.
Oh, I think that will be a very small percentage of them because of the, well, now especially because of the hype. Maybe if there hadn't been so much hype in the media in the last couple of weeks, maybe they would have gone over, but now I think those are the coveted. They're even more coveted than they were because of the hype and the prices on eBay. So I think a lot of these people will be getting gift certificates to Amazon or Best Buy or a similar place so they can actually just wait until the supply comes out. And that's not a bad compromise if Santa gives you a $500 gift certificate to an electronics store.
No, that's not bad at all. I wish I could get that too.
That'll be on the top of my list too. I could do a lot of damage with that.
Ida Rose, one thing that people are forgetting are the current gen consoles that, you know, already established in the marketplace and have been out there for quite some time. I mean, the PS2, the Xbox, as well as the GameCube. I mean, these are still serviceable systems that do the job, and they have a library of games.
You're very right about that, Rio. I was in Walmart the day before the PS3 launch, and they had an ad over the PA system talking about the beautiful PS2. Get it now. Great price. And I chuckled because I really don't think anyone's going to make that compromise either. I'm sure some parents will try to pull that one over their kids. People really want what is hottest in the gaming market. Established games, well-known gameplay, all of that is not as big a selling feature as you might think. I think a lot of people are going to wait till they could get the hottest item.
Right. See, and that's the funny thing when it comes to gaming consoles. It's always about the newest thing. I mean, there are these alternatives out there that great price points. PS2's priced at, what, $129. You get the Xbox for $149, the GameCube for only $99. I mean, games-wise, it's great, too, because these consoles have been out for quite some time. You got great games out there for these systems. But like you said, people want the newest thing.
Yeah, you can't call your friends the morning after Christmas and say, I got an Xbox or a PS2 and expect them to come running over. The cool factor is just not there. But again, if you call your friend on the day after Christmas and say, I got a new digital TV or a new really high-density megapixel camera, I think that might have a lot more cachet this year. And kids are, in fact, getting, you know, iPods and digital TVs and everything else. My nieces last year scored easily a dozen consumer electronic products for Christmas, and they are 7 and 10. So that is what kids want. The cool factor goes across a whole range of consumer electronics, not just gaming.
How about the Zune? Do you think that'll be a hot seller this holiday season? It'll be a nice alternative, I think.
Again, we're talking about alternatives in markets that have a lot of cult-type status involved with them. You know, it's a fine product. I haven't played with one yet. The price point's coming in right around a similarly featured iPod. I don't really know if it's an iPod killer. I'm not sure anything is an iPod killer right now. It's very much me too in some regards, and it does have some unique features. But I don't think Microsoft is going to beat the pants off of Apple on the iPod arena for Christmas. I think it'll have a decent clip, and we'll see. But again, the hard drive-based MP3 market is a relatively small one, despite the hype. So,
okay, Ida Rose, to summarize, can't get a PS3, can't get a Wii. Give us a laundry list of alternatives in a quick, say, 20 seconds of what shoppers could get out there, if that's not putting enough pressure on you already.
Not a problem. For $500 or so, if that's really the price you have to get, you could buy a host of different things. I mean, you could get a low-end digital TV, some of the LCD TVs of decent size. I mean, you could actually hang them in your living room. Have come down to that price point. They tend to be no brand, but they actually work very, very well. The technology is advanced enough that you could get a high-quality experience. You could also buy a couple of hard drive-based iPods or quite a few of the flash-based players. 8-gig flash players now have come down to a really reasonable price point. That's enough storage for most people. Around 8-gig is enough for the average consumer. You could buy some of the portable gaming devices we talked about. Another super hot market this year is digital still cameras. That market continues to soar. We have advancements in megapixel technology. We have features in the DSPs that help correct for motion and for low light conditions. We have large LCD panels. We have interesting colors, things that make consumers want to go out and buy a new one every literally 12 to 18 months. These products are wonderful, wonderful products that will have cachet with the kids and with the teenagers in the new year. And will have staying power, too. They won't be trendy flashes in the pan.
Any 1080p LCDs for $500?
You can probably get some low-end LCDs for $500. Hey, but they're really, they're fine TVs. They may not be the ultimate TV, but they make a great bedroom TV or small den, small office. Yeah, for $500, I mean, we wouldn't have been talking like this time last year, so.
Right. I just thought I'd throw it out there and see if you had any insights, an inside scoop on any deals out there.
Yeah, I think the electronics industry realizes it is hot year-round. It doesn't rely on day after Thanksgiving anymore to make all of its sales. People are buying electronics every day, every year. In the last couple of years, there are multiple Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, back to school. The reason people buy electronics is basically filled up the entire calendar, and it's a wonderful thing for the industry.
See, so there are some alternatives to the PS3 and Wii after all. You could go with Xbox 360, any of the current-gen consoles, PS2, Xbox, GameCube. You have portable gaming devices such as the DS or the PSP. You could even go the PC gaming route, or even just say the hell with it and purchase a new MP3 player, digital camera, or LCD. For PodTech News, I'm Rio Pacino.
That's our program for this week. PodTech News Weekly Magazine is produced by Michael Klinger, Catherine Girardeau, Rio Pacino, and Matt Kelly. I'm Jason Lopez.